Hi, all. This is Ian O'Byrne, and welcome to Four Questions Four. In this podcast, I'm interviewing experts in literacy, technology, and education as I take a deep dive into their thoughts about a specific area. In this episode, I'm speaking with Amy Hutchison. Amy is at HUTCHISONAMY on Twitter. Without further ado, I've got four questions for Amy about hybrid and blended learning.
In a world where students are dying to learn, smart and savvy educators forge new alliances between literacy, technology, and education. An unexpected voice comes to provide guidance in these transitory times. Welcome to Four Questions Four with Ian O'Byrne.
Hey, everybody. My name is Ian O'Byrne. I'm the department editor for Journal of Adolescent and Adult Literacy, the Multiliteracies department editor. We've been putting together a series of interviews to supplement the columns that have been appearing in the journal. The latest column was on hybrid and blended learning. As part of these supplements, we've been reaching out to experts in the field to give some extra depth and complexity to the pieces that we've presented. Today I'm really excited. I have one of my good friends in the field. Amy, can you introduce yourself and tell us where you're coming from?
Yep. I'm Amy Hutchison, an associate professor at Iowa State University, where my area of teaching and research is technology and literacy.
Very cool. So I think Amy's going to be able to give us tremendous insight into some of the things that we bring up in the column. The first thing that I'm really interested in is, you know, the column is about hybrid and blended learning. So, Amy, we've been battling this out, you know, different people in the interviews. And I know when we go into schools or we go into higher ed, we say, you know, how are you integrating hybrid or blended learning opportunities? And a lot of times we get these quizzical looks. So for you, what is hybrid or blended learning?
Well, I think you're right. It goes by a lot of different terms, and it is it's confusing in a lot of ways. But I think it is really just the combination of physical and digital space to deliver content, ultimately. Now, that can look a lot of different ways. It can be a flipped classroom model where a lot of introduction of a concept occurs outside of the classroom, and then the class time is used for project-based learning, activities, inquiry, that sort of thing. It could be as simple as using digital spaces to differentiate for students. So there may be some common learning time, but then technology is used to differentiate and provide very specific learning opportunities for individual students, so a very individualized approach. It could be where most of the learning that happens inside the classroom is just in the physical space, and then the class conversation is continued outside of the classroom in a digital space. And so those are a few examples, but, you know, the options are really endless. But it really is just the idea of combining both that physical and digital space to increase learning opportunities for students.
So when we combine those physical and digital spaces, you know, we can do, hypothetically, we can do some incredible things. So what opportunities do we have for, you know, changes in pedagogy? What does this do for classroom interactions? Like, you know, why do this? What does this do for teaching and learning when we move to hybrid or blended spaces?
I think it's first important to consider the idea that it is a completely different pedagogical approach. And so you have to think about that. So it is one pedagogical approach of many. And I think just like when we ask, we want our students, for example, to know when to use a particular digital tool, I think the same applies to blended learning. It's really important to understand when it's appropriate to use various types of digital spaces and how to combine those with the physical spaces. And so I think that it really increases our opportunities. It increases our repertoire of instructional strategies. It increases our opportunities to connect outside of the classroom. But again, it's a entirely new kind or different kind of pedagogical approach, and it's appropriate to know when to apply it. And it doesn't apply to every learning situation always.
So when, you know, we have these different pedagogical opportunities, we have these different approaches that we can use. Let's say I'm a secondary educator. Let's say I'm a higher ed instructor and I'm watching this and listening to you, and I want to do this. How do I get started? Like what should I consider in terms of pedagogy? What should I consider in terms of tools, or what should I be thinking? How do I start?
I think there's really three big categories that you need to be thinking in terms of anytime you're integrating technology into your instruction. But first, you've got to consider your content. I think that's always the starting point. What is it that you want your students to know and be able to do? And what is the evidence of that? How are we going to know if our students know it? So if you know your content really well and you know what it is you want your students to know, then you can consider the best pedagogical approach. So that means then you have to have a really good toolbox of pedagogical approaches. So what are some ways to best teach this type of content? The same approach is not going to work for all content. So for this content, what are some grouping strategies? What is the depth of knowledge that I want my students to know? Do I want them to have convergent understandings at the end of this, or divergent understandings? Do they all need to know exactly the same thing in the same way, or can they come to their own interpretations and understandings? So I think those are really important questions to ask that can help in choosing the correct pedagogical approach. But you have to understand those different approaches as they relate to the content you're trying to teach. So I think first is content, second is knowing a range of pedagogical approaches, and then I think third is knowing a range of technologies that can support those pedagogical approaches. So for example, if you know that you're going to be teaching students a concept that might be really hard for them to just understand by reading, then you know that a video might be a great way to introduce that or to provide that background knowledge. You don't have to know the exact video tool you might use. I don't think teachers have to know like every single digital tool under the sun, but they need to know types of tools and types of activities. So if I know that it would be really helpful for me to record a video that would help my students visualize something, then I just have to know that that type of technology exists. I can then go find the specific tool, but I think it's really important to know the types of activities that you can use to bring into these blended learning spaces. So I think three big categories would be really knowing your content, really understanding a range of pedagogical approaches that can be brought into blended environments, and really knowing the types of digital activities or activities that can occur in digitally mediated spaces that can support the teaching of that content. And then I'll add a bonus one, which I think is being willing to really play with the technology and explore with technology. I think that's really important to know that, like, you might not know all the answers, and that's okay. Play around and figure it out. So I think those are the big things that those are the starting points.
I love the idea of play, and this is not one of the questions that I had in there, but this is something that came up in the other interviews. This is something that, you know, my students in the past have joked with me about, that I would always say, well, you know, just play with it. Like, you're using a new tool, it might fail, play with it. This morning in the discussion with Catherine Kennedy, we said, you know, you should have the opportunity to play and experiment with these different, you know, pedagogies, with these different tools. And you should be open with your students and say, hey, I'm going to try something and this might fail. This might not work. And it's, you know, the students bear a certain amount of responsibility to say, hey, we get the fact that you're trying new things, you know, and it might not work out, but we know that we're on the bleeding edge and you are being a reflective practitioner. So the challenge is in that concept of play, like, when, how does that interact with our high expectations in the classroom? You know, I mean, what is your advice for the teachers and educators out there that they don't see the value in play, or they're fearful of, you know, having to play or, you know, experiment in their classroom with these things, but the you know, ultimately they might not do it perfectly, or they might not be the expert in the classroom or the sage on the stage or whatever. Like, sometimes we don't think play belongs in a classroom, especially as we move further along the educational continuum.
Sure. I think that in some ways this idea is becoming more accepted as, like, the maker movement becomes more popular, and this idea of tinkering, and those are not specifically related to digital technology always, but just, I think this idea is becoming more popular that's really important to just try to make things and construct, and that there's a lot of learning that happens in that. So that is positive. But I would say, I think there's a lot of ways that teachers can maximize their possibility of success by doing some things in advance. So yes, you might let your students play, or you might try something new. But one of the things I've talked about in an article I wrote about the technology integration planning cycle is by, well, first of all, think about what this is bringing to your students before you start thinking of all the constraints. Think about what it's offering them. And if you think about that first, then you might be more motivated to try to get past some of the roadblocks that you might have. But I think also considering in advance what some of those roadblocks might be. So if you're going to let your students play around with technology to and experiment and try new things, just test out some of those things in advance to see what might they come up against. I mean, some of the stupid things that can happen are, oh, you can only create one page with a free account, and then you have to pay, and now my students are stuck. By just thinking through some of those things in advance, you can actually solve so many of those problems. And so I would encourage teachers to play before they have their students play, because they will see a lot of those things, and often it's, there's so many workarounds and ways to solve those problems.
Yeah, I agree. It's great points. Some of the times the other kickback or pushback we often get is, you know, time, you know, that I don't have time to do this. I don't, you know, I have to teach other things. I don't have time to do these other things. You don't have time to play with these toys, but, I agree with you that I think it's more appropriate now. So the last question for you is, you know, you've seen, you've thought deeply and written about technology integration. You've seen educators start to integrate these digital techs and tools into instruction. You know, you've been part of most of the research that moves the field. In our circles, we talk a lot about shift happens. You know, we talk about literacy as deixis. Don would say that literacy is always changing. These texts and tools are always changing. So given that things are always changing and always progressing, what does the future look like, and how do we prepare as educators, how do we prepare our kids for that future, for that eventuality in literacy and tech when everything's always changing?
Good question. I think that one of the ways that I really see things changing that excites me is the opportunity for more individualized self-directed learning and opportunities to be a part of communities of practice outside of the classroom community. One good example of this are sites like Code Academy, for example. There are many ways this happens. This is just one example that happens to be on my mind because it's becoming really popular. It's a place where you can really learn a lot of, anyone can learn specialized skills at as deep of a level as they want. So there's that opportunity to get really specialized knowledge that goes beyond what you might have in a regular classroom setting. Obviously, there's things that we want all students to know and, you know, a minimum set of standards and skills. But beyond that, just like we do in our careers, as we advance, we become more specialized in areas that interest us or relate to our jobs. And I think there's a real opportunity for students to engage in some of that and learn the disciplinary literacies related to a particular topic or content area. And so that to me is this really neat thing that happens. So with a site like Code Academy, there are opportunities then, well, so I've participated in this and I came up with all these questions and there were places where I got stuck. And so then there was an opportunity for me to be a part of an online community that can answer those questions with me. But I think that's also a role of the classroom community. So we learn these things in online spaces, but then the classroom community is still there to support us and to advance our knowledge. Maybe I have a question, or maybe I want to discuss this further because I'm not sure what I think about it. And maybe I want to generate new questions about this and figure out what I want to explore next. I think that's what the role that a classroom community can serve and should serve, in my opinion. But I think just the opportunity to really specialize, individualize instruction, participate in these online communities that are of interest to us is something that is becoming increasingly available with, you know, so many online courses and opportunities to participate in MOOCs and things like that. I really think we have to bring that into the classroom space and make the classroom space less of a transmission of knowledge from the teacher, but help the teacher really learn how to facilitate participation in those communities and problem solving when there is a problem in those spaces, or learning how to find answers to questions that we have. And that really excites me, and I hope it's the direction that we go.
I love it. It's, you know, we've been talking about all these challenges in these blended models, you know, and there's always the concern about, well, what's the role of the teacher as things advance? You know, is the teacher still needed? You know, and as educators, we say, well, yeah, the teacher's definitely still needed, but we're trying to figure out the role of the teacher. It might be allowing your students to go out online and experience these different learning opportunities and connect with others and then come back in and face to face or even virtually with the educator, but have that one home base where the students can decompress and think about the bigger issues and talk with their peers and, you know, get some of those dispositional pieces and the learning skills and the life skills from the educator talking about what to do, what not to do, you know, help them problem solve and then go back out and connect.
I think if you think that a constructivist approach to learning is an effective one, then you recognize and agree that, you know, you learn as part of a community and you construct knowledge together. And I think that is what that classroom space is for. I think the traditional classroom is one of those communities. But what I love about technology is that it doesn't have to be the only community of learning. It can be one of many, but it's still a really important one and a vital one. And it might be the place where we learn how to participate in these communities and how to ask the right questions. And so it is a really important one, but it's just one of what I think can be many. I think through digital spaces, we can be part of a more global community where we can learn far outside of our classroom walls and far more than what you can learn in a traditional classroom.
Very cool. It's like sci-fi. once again, I want to thank Amy for coming on in. Amy, where can people get in touch with you? Where do you hang out on the internet?
Lots of places. Twitter at Hutchison Amy. And if you Google me, I have a website. I have a new book out. And I have all kinds of other things.
I will put all of the links in the post. We'll share this out. Once again, we've been putting these interviews together. We've been trying to add some complexity to the columns. We will share all the interviews out, but by all means, get in touch with us, get in touch with Amy, talk about the work that you're doing. If you are messing around with hybrid or blended models in your classroom and you're having challenges, reach out, connect. The community online is more than helpful, more than appreciative to help people tinker with their ideas. Have responses to these interviews, you know, conduct video blog posts, conduct your own blog post, think about some of the issues that we're talking about and submit them back in and talk about what you're doing in your classroom. So with that being said, we'll wrap up.
You've listened to 4 Questions for Ian O'Byrne.